Bucky Bacall with the Backyard Chicken Broadcast. People often ask me if I eat chicken. They don't know what answer to expect, I guess because I'm a little coy about the topic on the broadcast. I don't talk about it often because I'm not interested in being in the position of calling myself a moral authority. I do believe there are right choices to make about food, having to do with aesthetics, health, and ethics. And I also believe most of those choices are applicable to most, and maybe even all, folks, especially since food choices potentially deplete, pollute, or imbalance our shared resources. Still, I believe diet is ultimately a personal decision. I just urge others to make it a well-informed personal decision. Many listeners think I may be a vegetarian because I talk about how chickens provide eggs and improve vegetable gardens, but I rarely bring up meat. And because I often talk about how adorable chickens are. However, I'm not a vegetarian anymore. I've been a vegetarian almost half my life and was a vegan for a decade. Now, I do eat meat. I try as much as I can to eat locally, organically, naturally, humanely raised food, and indeed my rules are more complicated than they were when I was a vegetarian or a vegan. On the other hand, I should probably call them guidelines rather than rules, because I have to admit, I often change or bend them. In a lot of ways, it was easier to be vegetarian. I used to think, and still sometimes do, that self-proclaimed omnivores have a tendency to rationalize what they feel like eating, which is not always the wrong approach to ethics, but obviously makes it a lot more difficult to claim dispassionate or objective thinking, if you believe such things exist. But eventually, I started to believe some of those rationalizations, or whatever they were, myself. On the one hand, I heard all the arguments about corporate organic veggies and soy displacing habitats in some of the ways animal agriculture does, even causing pollution. That too much soy or grapeseed oil or agave nectar can be as bad for you as high cholesterol meats and cheeses. And I started thinking more about what's possible in local and seasonal eating. At the same time, I started seeing more and more meat making apparently credible claims to raising animals for slaughter under conditions that were not so objectionable. After all, I had stopped being literally vegan for years, making the exception of only eating eggs laid by the spoiled hens living in my own backyard. Later, after I had been an omnivore for quite a while, an episode of one of my favorite broadcasts of all time, syndicated food policy show, Deconstructing Dinner, had a big influence on my thinking. Not the first time the show had impacted my thinking, and one of the reasons I'm so proud to be featured on it from time to time. In October 09, the Conscientious Cooks episode featured Dan Barber of Blue Hills' visit to a French farm and natural foie gras producer. Hearing that the farmer's methods of making foie gras were the opposite of every objectionable practice that makes foie gras so controversial was impressive to me. But even more impressive was to hear that the foie gras was winning awards, to the consternation of traditional producers, and that the farmer insisted that this was the way to do it. No force feeding, but providing the kind of goose buffet that inspired them to pig out of their own accord. But what really sent me over the top was the revelation that wild geese flying overhead came to stay and bred with his domesticated flock. That's how he maintained population and genetic diversity. It made me reflect on a deeper level about my own chickens and other small-scale livestock I'd met, and the trade-off struck between domesticated animals and humans who do our utmost to anticipate their every need, ultimately for ends that principled animal rights folks would characterize as exploitation. I was never inclined to agree with those folks, yet I was not quite sure if the burden of proof was on me to show the animals were getting a good deal, if my perspective could truly pass muster. My animals seemed happy, quite happy. They made little effort to leave and ultimately always came home to roost. But still, they really didn't have choice in the matter. They were born into domestication. But the wild geese in that episode illustrated that animals do make that choice. And furthermore, the show referred, for detail, to a book by Stephen Budjansky, an author, historian, and journalist. Budjansky has written books about military and intelligence, history, science, and the natural world, and is also a unique voice among the emerging category of animal writers. I encourage my listeners to explore his work. The crux of The Covenant of the Wild, Why Animals Choose Domestication, is not previously unheard of or difficult to follow. In it, he thoroughly and entertainingly documents the history of animal domestication as a process that provides advantages to both humans and animals. Certain animals actually chose domestication, preferring the reliable comfort of captivity to the dangers of feral life, and points out that domesticated animals do not face extinction. What I like the least about the book is his references to so-called animal rights extremists. Although he does not generalize, there is a tone to the book that some anti-vegetarians and militant carnivores have latched onto. Ultimately, it's clear that Budiansky is an animal lover, and I guess I wish he could help break the cycle of contention between those who think animals deserve no consideration at all, and those few who see oppression in everything from redundant animal testing to puppy mills to backyard coops. At one point, he even seems to argue that factory farms might be more comfortable than jungle life. Yet it rings rhetorical, as if he's obliged himself to follow his own logic to an extreme he might not sincerely believe. On the other hand, I was intrigued with his descriptions of how humans have changed significantly as a result of animal domestication, both culturally and physically, implying the question, who domesticated who? But don't get me wrong, it's not exactly case closed, problem solved. Truthfully, my personal agricultural explorations stop short of the homesteading practices I admire. I don't know if I'd have the heart to slaughter chickens by my own hand, and I still feel a hypocrite for leaving that responsibility to others. It fascinates me when small-scale farmers and homesteaders who do slaughter animals talk openly about the heartbreak of the process, but are resolved to the fact that it's also part of the big picture. There are folks like the 60s back-to-earth pioneers, Helen and Scott Nearing, who managed to homestead without ever eating animal products. Yet most people who feed themselves argue very convincingly from personal experience that for humans to eat, something else has to die, either from loss of habitat, from being hunted, or from being coddled up to the day of slaughter. Eating is about survival, yet we can and should do it with style, joy, and ethics. Not necessarily in that order. When the Bucky Bacaw agenda hits the plate, it's less about what's there, but how it got there, and not just the means of production, but also about making personal food decisions. And where I think my personal experience is relevant to others is that, for me, struggling with the question of what to eat doesn't detract from my enjoyment of the meal, but in fact enhances it, just as the effort of growing your own veggies or raising chickens makes your meal taste better than if you just popped into the grocery on the way home. This has been Bucky Bacaw. I had a good time. Bucky Bacaw's Backyard Chicken Broadcast was produced by the Sagebrush Variety Show with support from Boise Community Radio and the Green Institute.